Welcome into episode 140 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast alongside Craig Morgan.
How you doing?
And Jamie, Craig already disappointing me. We're 8 seconds into the show. And Jamie Eisner.
The Natty Hattie.
Ooh, better.
Filling in.
All right. I'm Luke Lipinski. Here we go. Let's talk Nashville Predators hockey.
Here we go.
We have a fast-moving show today because for some reason.
Because Luke was late.
That's not why, though. We usually the system is I'm like a couple minutes late. I was 1 minute late today, and then we drag on for like an extra hour longer than we should have.
I need to take a moment to note something that happened to me this morning. I pulled into the Starbucks line at the same time.
Just said we don't have time.
Jeep Cherokee coming from another direction. I had the right of way, but I waved him in. When I reached the window, the barista said, "The guy in front of you paid for your coffee. You're good."
What? Obviously that? A listener to the show.
So, dude in the gray Jeep Cherokee at Peoria. And what are we at? Peoria in 20-something?
Yeah, Peoria in the 17s.
Jamie doesn't know. He's only here every day.
Thanks. There's no real road right there. I guess it's 35th Avenue.
We're basically in a field.
Thanks for the free coffee.
Was ours free, too, or he just got yours free?
The entire order. And I had a sandwich, too. It was like 20 bucks.
Yeah, once Craig found out it was free, he ordered like nine things.
Can you add?
Can I just get one of everything in your display?
Do you guys have stock options available? Venti?
That was a pretty cool thing. And that and the lack of traffic this morning made for a good start.
Craig Morgan is happy.
Yeah, St. Patrick's Day
started. Until I got to the office.
Yeah. So. Well, you know.
St. Patrick's Day started early for everybody, apparently, except us.
Yeah.
Apparently. You had another theory, didn't you?
I did? Everybody just got in front of me because I had traffic this morning.
<okay. laughs> I thought it was National 13 seed beats Arizona Day.
Oh, no. National 13 seed blows out Arizona Day. Maybe that's why everybody is either celebrating if you're an ASU fan or just non-existent if you're a U of A fan.
Got it.
I do want to open. We've got a few listener questions. You can always tweet into the show at the Natty Hattie. We're not going to get to all of them today, but Trond tweets in, "Where's the pod?" It's a fair question, Trond.
Trond.
Here it is.
The pod is here.
That's right. You did have to wait longer than usual because I thought about it. We actually...
I think we recorded about Monday or Tuesday last week.
Yeah.
So it was like a 10 or 11 day gap.
Yes. But it's here now, and the quality so far, I would say, has been subpar.
Yeah.
Ready?
Well, hey, you know, you don't have to pick at your skin anymore. You know, you can get your fix of the Natty Hattie today.
Oh.
Just imagine.
Just as I took a sip of coffee.
Sitting in the corner.
Sip of free coffee.
Yes, it is free coffee, so.
So it doesn't really matter
why
how
you're
tastes.
Saying today is a disappointment, Luke. Of course, you drink free coffee every day, don't you, Luke?
Yeah, I don't really notice the difference.
Anyway.
I drink free coffee 80% of the time. I like to think I earned that coffee. Let's start with the Nashville Predators, who are 12-0-1.
80%, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm questioning
80%,
that
number.
And
again, none of us are math majors.
Are we talking about in your overall life, or?
Yes, let's go with that.
Specifically.
Let's do that. Specifically.
Okay. Sometimes Paige DeMacos buys some coffee.
That has never once happened. Ever. Well, ever.
She buys me coffee sometimes.
She has.
We know where I rank in the pecking order.
She's paid for his coffee as many times as she has paid him compliments.
Yeah. Actually, she probably has got me coffee at least once. So maybe that's maybe more.
She's been nice to you once.
Yeah, once. I doubt she remembers it or would acknowledge that moment.
No, she would never acknowledge
it. Nashville. For the fourth time. 12-0-1 this season.
102 points.
They,
wow.
We just saw them here last night, but that's not the reason we're starting with them. We're starting with them because they have the best record in hockey, but we did just see them in person. And they didn't look great last night, but they
won.
They won, and they certainly didn't look bad. That wasn't their best, but even not their best is still pretty good. They're just... What stands out to me seeing them in person, and I don't think this is like breaking news because we've all talked about this, but they're just so deep. They just don't have any weaknesses.
Nope. And the thing that I think is very interesting and something Craig pointed out in his article, for whatever reason it slipped my mind, that entire run last year after the first round was without Ryan Johansson. Mm-hmm. So we still haven't seen, as good as they were in the postseason, them full strength. Yeah. And now they have Johansson and they have Kyle Turris.
Yeah.
They have some depth on the middle now that they did not have last year. This is a better team than the team that went to the Cup last year.
Kyle Turris is not the same player he was when he was with the Phoenix Coyotes, which when did Phoenix, by the way, when did that name change? Because
14,
the officials
15.
Still called
them
Phoenix last
night.
Still, last night, they were calling them the Phoenix Coyotes.
I know. That's the first time in a long time, but we were all surprised.
But either way, when Kyle Turris was on them, they were the Phoenix Coyotes. He's not the same player he was then, and I would say he's a better player now than he was in Ottawa 2 years ago. I just agree. Seems to fit in Nashville.
Mm-hmm. This team,
he's not asked to be a number one center, which I think is important.
You can nitpick, you can find flaws if you want to with this team. You can do that with any team because of the salary cap, but they're so good up the middle. They have the best blue line in hockey. Pekka Rinne, or as they say in Finland, Pekka Rinne, is having a Vezina caliber season. Sorry. You didn't like that at all, did you?
No, I was thinking
about... Do you want the Redeem Verbata
pronunciation? Yeah, I said I need Redeem Verbata or Sebastian.
You should have him on for all European names. He's having a fantastic season as well. It helps that he's playing behind the team he's playing behind, but he was sharp last night too. When I look at this team now, the way they're going, the momentum they have heading into the playoffs, how tight they are defensively, they've allowed two goals or fewer. I think 10 of... I can't even remember what the streak is. I wrote it down. But... They're just flawless right now. The way I look at them, as much as you can be flawless in a salary cap era.
Yeah, and barring major injury troubles, I it's tough to see anybody but them coming out of the West. I know I've made jokes about Winnipeg for a lot of reasons, some of them financial.
Just a side note: did Winnipeg score 5 goals in Chicago in the first period last night? Did I imagine that?
I know they won 6-2.
I already know the answer. You don't have to look it up.
2 goals or fewer in 10 games during this streak Nashville is allowed. By the way,
They're so good.
They would play Dallas if the season ended right now. Yeah, Does that series
etch that in stone with the looks of the wild card and the Pacific races right now.
But a series between Nashville and Dallas, does that even go 4 games?
Mm. I could see that being a sweep.
Yeah, I'd say the only team that I think could even give them a little trouble that they could realistically face would, if for whatever reason, like LA or Anaheim might annoy them.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's...
Might bother them slightly. Might inconvenience the Predators on the way to the second round.
I'd be upset as a Nashville fan if my team was winning like this and then they went out and made the moves they made to get even better and then had to play Anaheim in the first round. That would seem a little unfair. And Anaheim's 1 point out of a playoff spot, so that's entirely possible. Hmm. You would like to have an easier draw than that, because when you're talking about winning the cup, as Nashville is, all these series build upon each other. So if you can get a sweep in there, that would really help.
Well, yeah, because if they play Colorado or Dallas, they win in 3. So I'm not quite as worried.
It's interesting that, a lot of times teams that are in this situation, maybe they'll rest players, maybe they'll do some things to make sure that they're fresh, but their coach, Peter Laviolette, said yesterday that everything we talk about is to try and improve our position for the playoffs and home ice advantage. They really care about this. They want to be... I think they want to be the number one overall seed in the NHL. They're the only real threat they have is Tampa Bay right now.
Yeah.
Are they better now than they were last year?
Yes.
Thanks for listening, Luke.
Yeah, okay.
No, I want this to be a discussion. And how
you directed to Craig. Makes you feel like I'm not important. Yes, this is a better team. Direct.
Healthy Ryan Johansson, adding Kyle Turris. Yes.
They're a better team.
Look at their center position.
Which was the thing we worried about when last year going in the postseason. Are they deep enough down the middle as the same?
Credit their GM for being able to make these kinds of moves. Look, you can look at this roster and say they don't have a franchise center. They probably don't, right? No. But they're so good. This is the other way of doing it. You could construct, first of all, you construct an elite blue line, which they've done.
They have a franchise cornerstone on the blue line.
PK Subban was on the third pairing last night, at least on paper. Well, that's just absurd.
But they're just spreading it out. Yeah.
They have so many good defensemen, and it doesn't matter.
No, just make sure you're good up the middle, and they are good up the middle, and they are deep. They have 4 centers who can play.
And this is a team that lost James Neal for nothing.
Yeah. Jamie, would you say this team is better than last year's Nashville?
Oh, I would, Luke. I would say this is better than last year's Nashville.
It is remarkable because everybody talked last year about how it was a big deal that Pittsburgh won back-to-back Stanley Cups. Nobody wins back-to-back Cups since the late 90s. Nobody gets to back-to-back Cups, though, either. Just in general. Yeah. And Nashville has done this the exact right way. I mean, to have a team that got to Game 6 last year and to somehow improve them, at least on paper, and you can't predict injuries in the playoffs or whatever, but they've done everything they can to set themselves up. And I don't even think this is a case of, peaking a little too early because it's early March and they're playing their best hockey. They can carry this into April and May and June at this point. It's not like it's November.
And we've seen them do it. This is not a team that's going into the postseason with we have no idea how they're going to react when there's a lot of pressure on them. They all have postseason experience.
Yeah,
they've all been there.
Because of their depth, they have the luxury of not playing guys heavy minutes. Now they can roll 4 lines. They can give that 4th line a lot of ice time. They can give their third pairing a lot of ice time. So I'm not sure what you'd really change. I don't know how focused they should be on the number one overall seed, but the Western Conference, they're going to lock that up pretty soon, I would guess, and maybe then you make some decisions that might help the health and freshness of your team as you head into the playoffs.
And Vegas, I mean, you're going to talk about, I don't want to segue here with peaking too soon because they're not playing badly, but they're kind of evening out a little bit of
they're
late.
They're fading a little.
Yeah, looking a little vulnerable.
But, you know, it was going to happen.
Well, this is not the time for it to happen.
No.
See, but the thing is, in that division, still, they might be able to get out of it.
See, that's the problem. Just not they're good. Still the best team in that division. Anaheim could cause some problems, but also Anaheim's going to get it together too. Like, we're running out of time.
Yeah, Anaheim has 11 games left, and they're not in the playoffs right now.
I know. That's the team that I'm like, I think if they get in, they're going to be good, but there's a cutoff point where it's not going to matter.
I'm just looking at the Pacific Division, everybody's last 10 games, 5-4-1, 5-4-1, 5-4. Like, they're all, it's just so, such a 500 division, isn't it? Like, mm-hmm. Everybody.
There are a lot of very okay teams.
The Kings have gone on a crazy run to go 6-3-1 in their last 10, and Vancouver is squarely locked in on that.
The problem with LA is they still have no depth. Like the top of that team can compete with anybody, but you have to play more than six players.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to score enough goals. And this isn't 2012 where you can win all your games.
Well, and their blue line is not in the same stratosphere as it was in 2012.
No. Who's better, that blue line or Nashville's blue line?
Nashville.
Now? Yeah, I would agree with that.
LA's played better structurally, but Nashville has more talent.
Nashville has blue three line Doughties. Is absurd. Three Doughties. That sounds like a Canadian band.
I mean, with all due respect to the Rob Scuderis of the world, and no respect to the Slava Voynovs of the world, the players on Nashville are better.
The Rob Scuderis
and
of the world.
Matias Ekholm's a nice number four.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a terrific team.
Let's talk about Alex Ovechkin hitting 600 goals and where this ranks him in your guys' mind in terms of all-time goal scorers. Not just numbers-wise. I understand where he is numbers-wise. But it was brought up a lot on ESPN and I'm sure somewhere else what he would have to do to catch Wayne Gretzky in career goals. But Gretzky has 894, I believe.
Yeah. The longevity. It's not impossible, but very unlikely.
He basically needs 29 goals a year for 10
needs
more
to be,
years.
Yeah, he needs to be.
I don't see that happening.
80% of himself for 10 years.
His records are absurd, but could he catch Gordie Howe? Could he catch Jagr? Probably.
Well, I want to go back to Gretzky, though, for a second. Because, like you said, Gretzky's records are absurd, so I never even expect to hear his name brought up when somebody's chasing down milestones. And I don't think Ovechkin's going to get that many goals because of the era. Mm-hmm. But I never saw Gretzky in his prime. I've seen the footage of those games when the goalies refused to drop down or wear equipment or really do a whole lot. Not to take away from what Gretzky did. But where does... I know that sounded bad.
Wow. Damning with faint praise.
But goalies took the, wait, you want me to move to make a save
but
approach?
That's accurate, isn't it?
In for when the you most watch part? Many of the clips, it feels that way,
yeah,
yes.
Like you
it
just feels like you kick one leg out, that's not
it
really...
It feels like a different game. Talks about that all the time, how there was an error in the NHL where a wing could come down the wing and just blast something and score. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
No. It's a different game. Yeah. It is.
So what would Ovechkin have scored if he played in the late 70s and 80s?
All of the goals.
Fair question.
I think he'd have more than 894. I think his 600
probably,
now is about even.
It's tough to compare eras. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
Because I mean,
that's why
even
I'm asking
just,
you to do it.
But even just physically, the athletes now and how they train and how they perform, just it's not.
Yeah,
they would
I don't know.
A mid-level player would be dominant.
I hear what you're saying. Like an average player now that trains year-round would. I get that. I mean, you had stories of. Players wrapping up a game in 1983 and smoking cigarettes in the locker room or whatever. So I get that it's different eras. But specifically a guy like Ovechkin, who we're looking at as a historically great goal scorer, I just wonder, not so much what he would have done, I guess, in the 80s, maybe that's not a good way to put it, but just how does that convert compared to a guy like Gretzky? Gretzky's 10 times the player Ovi will ever be. Gretzky's got 1,900-plus assists. I'm not comparing them on that level.
But just on a pure goal
just
scoring.
Pure goal scoring, yeah.
See, stuff, because I'm the youngest one in the room.
Okay.
So for me, I didn't, again, I saw the very, very tail end of Gretzky. To me, the best goal scorer that I have seen is Ovechkin. Like, since I have been watching, and I've been watching pretty religiously since he was drafted. So basically after that full season, I forgot what name it was, the Beth lockout or the Dan lockout.
Yeah, we need to rename
can't remember
the
which
lockouts.
One that was, the 04-05. But I've been watching pretty religiously since then. And he is the best goal scorer that I have ever seen since I have been paying close attention to the league.
Yeah, I don't know. I go back to the earlier thing you said, Jamie, in comparing eras. There was a point in the 80s where the game just opened up, and it really was the Oilers that did that.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to make the comparison. There are just too many variables for me. Gretzky amazed me in that there were a couple seasons where he set goals, specific goals for statistics, where I'm going to average 2 assists this season, and he did it. I want to score a goal per game, and he exceeded it. Yeah. So he was, I don't know where to put him in, because he was a freak.
And you can
but
only,
in terms of pure goal scorers, Ovechkin's certainly there.
So the other he's guy top five,
that I,
right?
The other guy that I got to watch that I thought was an incredible pure goal scorer was Mike Bossy from the Islanders, great teams in the early 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. It feels like Ovechkin almost gets lost in the conversation right now, because the focus is either on Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid and the next era of players, or it's on the Penguins because they just won the cup, or the Blackhawks because they were winning cups before that, and Ovechkin hasn't won a cup, and it almost feels like he just sort of gets taken for granted what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that on the last show about how underrated I think he is. But kind of like talking about the comparing eras thing, you can also only – there's two factors. One, the teammates around you aren't as good as they are now in terms of – you talk about the advantages that – athletes have now. And two, you can only play the team that's put in front of you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's one of those things where you can't look at it and say, well, they didn't, you know, the goalies played this. You can only play the teams that were put in front of you.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that talk about how much Nicholas Backstrom has helped Ovi by getting him the puck in that area. But let's be honest, when we rank the great centers of all time,
yeah,
Nicholas Backstrom's not on that list. He's a very
good player. Yeah. But I.
So where do you think Ovi at, what is he, 32 now?
Yeah.
Where do you think he ends up? Let's say he plays until he's 40. Maybe he has 8 more seasons. And can he keep averaging? At some point, he's going to tail off, right?
Yeah.
The thing about
it might happen rapidly, and there might be another lockout.
He plays such a, not like, I don't want to say reckless, but just such an aggressive physical style of game that, I mean, he's built like a tank, but you wonder at some point if he's going to get hurt and miss.
Yeah, he doesn't 40 shy games. Away from contact.
No, not at all.
But he has been incredibly durable. Incredibly durable. I don't know.
So are you asking where he finishes in terms of total goals?
Would you say if he played 8 more seasons, do you think 25 goals a season is a good average? Is that too high as we get to the tail end of it?
I think that's
No, I think it's about right, because you're still going to be.
He might put up 40 next year.
Okay, so that's
then 30s, and
that's 200 more goals, and that puts him right around Gordie Howe. He might be able to finish second.
Exactly.
Gordie Howe is 801, so maybe that might be Ovi's goal.
Yeah, can he get past 800?
It's kind of like in football, where if you're a receiver, you're just trying to get to second place all time because Jerry Rice's numbers are so absurd.
Yes, Fitz has basically said that.
Yeah, well, but he can't play another 30 years, so you just have to kind of do what you can at this point. Let's talk about some of the bad teams, and that really just means Vancouver. So we watched the Coyotes shut out Vancouver the other night, and then we watched them play LA, who had just shut out Vancouver the night before, and then Vancouver went out and got shut out by somebody else after that.
They actually got Anaheim.
Are they still playing?
I can't tell who is trying more, the Canucks or the Memphis Grizzlies right now. Which team is trying more?
Well, Memphis has dropped like 20 in a row, haven't they?
Yeah, I think they lost their 19th in a row last night.
In fairness to the Canucks, I was talking to Ben Kuzma, one of the writers that covers them, and he said it felt like when Brock Besser went out of the lineup, all the air went out of that team. There was no hope of doing anything when he went out of the lineup, which that can't happen with professional athletes, of course. And you still have the Sedins there who should be, you know, doing what they were kept to do, be leaders. And this team's been shut out 3 straight games. It's crazy, but you understand it maybe in a short term. Wow, we just lost our best player easily. We were trying to build something for next season. Now we really can't even work on that. What is it we're trying to accomplish right now? Of the teams that are at the bottom of the standings right now,
they are the worst.
I put odds on them finishing dead last in the NHL.
I'm not sure they're going to score again. And Jamie references that draft of 6 teams we did at the start of the year and how he took Buffalo with his first pick of a team won't make the playoffs.
I still think Buffalo is the worst team in hockey right now.
Vancouver was far and away my best pick. And I'm the biggest Brock Besser fan in the world, but you lose him out of your lineup. Did Vancouver all of a sudden realize, we're not going to win the cup because we don't have Besser? Like, what really changed? You're not going to score as much, but that shouldn't mean you never score another goal.
No, that's, I mean, it's an extreme. Granted, there's more attention probably being paid to the Sedins now because there's nobody else to worry about on that team other than, you know, Bo Horvat. But, yeah, they need to pick it up. Maybe they will at some point. To Jamie's point, Buffalo does have success and experience and know-how when it comes to tanking. So they may be able to hold on to that top spot because they did a very good job of it the last time around.
You would think after the way things have worked out the last couple of years for them, though, that maybe it wouldn't be a priority at this point. I mean, they even got – I guess they didn't get the guy Edmonton. They wanted. Well, I think Edmonton's trying. They're just spinning in circles a lot. So Buffalo currently has the worst record. The Coyotes actually technically still have the second worst record. They're light years ahead of these other teams at this point. Like, they've actually gotten Vancouver, better. Yeah.
The Coyotes will probably finish ahead of both of those teams when it's all said and done.
I would
run out of time, obviously.
No, they'll but they're winning most nights, and those other teams aren't even scoring goals anymore. Brings us to a question.
Okay.
Which I can't find, so somebody else talk for a second. I can't find who sent in the question, but here we go. It's from Robert. At Nelson Yotes on Twitter. Say the Coyotes miraculously win the lottery, so you've already lost me.
Okay. Phoenix Sports for Interest winning a draft lottery?
Yeah.
Okay.
But let's just go into fantasy world here for a second. With the more dire need for center forwards in the Coyotes system than defensemen, should they move the Dahlin pick to get the number one center they need, or is he too good a prospect to pass up and you solve the need another way?
You always get the number one center you need. You just need somebody to give you a number one center, which is going to be the problem.
Who is the number one center exactly?
Yes. If you can do a sign and trade for John Tavares, and it involves Rasmus Dahlin, you do it. But the Islanders aren't going
to
do that.
Okay. But now let me add on to Robert's question.
Tavares would have to agree to that, right? If you've read Pierre LeBrun's piece on the potential of a sign-and-trade, the idea is that if Tavares, if the Islanders sign him, he can get the eighth year. And if that's important to him, you know, he can get some extra security. And he could also help out a team that he's going to, a contender, by having a lower salary that year, which takes the entire cap number down. But John Tavares wants to go to a contender. He's not coming to the Coyotes. Sorry to break your heart, Coyotes fans, but that's not happening. Stop dreaming about it. He's not going to be here.
Okay, so let's take this one step further. Let me piggyback on Robert. And I'm going to, how dare you, burst my bubble of having John Tavares in the desert.
You can't have nice things.
I mean, you could go to Vegas. So,
give me another number one center that's out there that you feel like you could trade for.
Well, I want to know what's going to happen with Tyler Seguin long term because I believe he's going into a contract year next year, isn't he?
Dreisaitl.
Okay. Yeah, Leon Dreisaitl.
Let's use Dreisaitl because it's Edmonton.
Is he a number one center? I don't know.
He's closer than anything that Arizona has right now.
Maybe we shouldn't use a specific.
And maybe probably the most potentially available.
So let's say Dreisaitl.
I don't rule anything out with Chiarelli.
It's tough to have to use Chiarelli as an example. But let's say a number one center that you're very comfortable with is available, okay? We won't call him John Tavares. We won't necessarily call him Dreisaitl. Rasmus Dahlin's probably not going to get that person by himself, right?
No.
This is where I would piggyback on. Craig and I talked about this a little bit the other night in the press box. I would trade Dahlin and probably any forward the Coyotes have if it got me a true number one center. Not like, this guy could evolve into one.
Do you throw Dreisaitl in that mix?
He's right on the fringe. That's the thing. That's why I don't want to use him as an example.
You might have to take a chance on somebody like that.
But I would do it. To get a number one center, that's what this team is missing at this point. I can replace any forward. They've already got your defense.
Especially on the wing. I know people flip out at the idea that the Coyotes could package Clayton Keller, but if you can get a true number one center.
For John Tavares?
Oh, for John
Tavares. Let me think about it for less than 1 second.
Yeah.
What does it take? What is the package?
And you don't know that Dahlin's supposed to be good, but that's not even. You don't need defense necessarily. You're already set.
It also doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how good your running back is. If you can get a franchise quarterback, you get the franchise quarterback.
Well, but I'm just speaking to the fans that Craig is saying are freaking out right now. In Dahlin, you're trading away something that you don't have yet. So at that point, are you essentially just trading a wing that can be replaced through free agency for a true number one center? If you pulled that off, you're in the playoffs next year. In the playoffs. Guaranteed. I will guarantee it on this show.
I just don't anticipate that situation happening.
No, I don't either. But it was a question. It was an interesting one because as much as we've talked about where the Coyotes are going to pick in this draft and how they You take Dahlin if you have the number one pick, and you just have one of the best defenses in hockey, but they don't need it. I really hadn't heard that question posed before of could you swing him and get a number one center.
Tyler Seguin is, in fact, going into a contract here next year at a cap hit right now of 5.75. I'm assuming he's going to want a significant increase over that.
Yeah, that's going up.
Yeah, they'll be paying him more than they are currently paying him. And I don't know why Dallas would let him go necessarily.
Well, he's 26 years old.
Yeah.
Unless Peter Chiarelli becomes Dallas's GM, too. What if he was just the GM of half the teams in the league? Let's see. Other topics here.
By the way, with Sagan being 26 and Ben being 28, they feel like they've been in the league forever.
Yeah. And Dallas has done nothing with them thus far.
Yeah, it's amazing that
right
Dallas is so mediocre.
They have two of the 25 best players.
TikTok.
Yeah.
They've done nothing.
Other questions?
It's Edmontonian.
Edmontonian. Sounds like a historical period in time. Would the Stepan Ranta trade still have happened if the Coyotes won the first overall pick last year? Now, I don't have who sent this question, and Craig pulled it and put it in the rundown, but I'll take a look.
Here's what I would say to that. Are you looking it up, actually? Did you want to include the listener first?
Yeah, I'll look it up while you talk.
If they had read it again.
Well, how you phrased it was, would the Stepan Ranta trade still have happened if the Coyotes won the first overall pick last year? I have to assume it probably wouldn't have.
Because they moved the seventh pick and not the first pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they knew what pick they had, obviously, when they traded it.
Maybe in some to some lesser degree, they still needed a number one goalie, right?
Yes.
So they might have just gone after Ranta.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they could have found another. They could have traded their other first-round pick just for Ranta or something. I mean, it would have looked different, but I don't...
That's what I would say to that.
I don't think you trade the number one overall pick, even though we just had a discussion about trading the number one overall pick, but it's a little bit different when you're talking about a franchise center as opposed to... Derek Stepan's been outstanding.
Right. But you could have drafted... Yeah, you could have drafted a center, so...
I mean, they could have drafted Hischier or Patrick, so exactly. I don't think they would have...
Well, maybe Hischier. Who's having a pretty good season, by the way.
Yeah, he is.
What would realignment look like? That's another question.
Boy, that was another.
It's really interesting to look at it. You know, I've heard a lot of talk, and maybe you guys saw the ESPN piece where they suggested that the Coyotes could end up in some crazy central-ish division with awful travel. And I think there's some traction.
There's a league. Shock.
Wait, the team with no prestige is going to get the raw end of the deal? Can't believe that's going
to
happen.
As they get better, they'll have to travel even more.
So listen to the teams they throw in this division. Colorado, Dallas, okay. St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, Minnesota, Winnipeg. That's just ungodly travel. So at points in the season, you could be playing a division rival who is three time zones away when you're playing Detroit.
Well, okay, hold on. Let me jump in on that. That is the Central Division as it's currently constructed. Except Detroit instead of Minnesota. And Detroit fought so long to not be in the West that that's not happening. So just basically what you're saying is add the Coyotes to the Central Division.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, they would have to do that, or they would have to put both Alberta teams in the Central, and then, I mean, it would be strange.
I guess you could move Colorado to the West.
Colorado and then Seattle to the Pacific, and then both Alberta teams to the Central.
So I've been thinking about this, and I'll probably throw this in my Sunday column. I've been thinking about a six-division format, which I think would help the league better, or even an eight-division format, going more to like an NFL
model. NFL style.
Anything that changes the current playoff format.
So here's my... Yes. I won't read this all because it's too much, but let me give you the eight-division format, which is my favorite because it's balanced, right? 32 does not divide by six.
No.
You have to have two teams.
No matter how much you try.
Yep. So...
Well, it depends. Do you count Buffalo as a full team?
You have one team that is a rover. Yeah. Change divisions each quarter of the season.
So. Yeah, they should make like the worst team in the league. That's your punishment. Is they have to put you in you get a random division.
Or you just get relegated to
the
AHL.
Relegation. There we go.
Buffalo's in the Pacific next year.
So here's my eight-division format, which is balanced. Four teams in each. Division winners qualify for the playoffs, and then you just take the four next best records from the conference.
I already like this more than the current system.
So here's my Northwest division. You can change the names, too, if you think my names are awful. If you don't like directionals.
Can we name them after famous NHL players from these regions of the country?
We could try.
All right.
Okay, here's my Northwest Division. Seattle, Vancouver, Edmonton, and Calgary.
Okay.
Yeah.
That works geographically. The Pacific Division, San Jose, L.A., Anaheim, Arizona.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. My West Division, because I don't know what to call it other than this. And this one gets a little dicey with geography, but not too bad.
I love the creative name.
I could call it the, sorry to the folks who live there, I could call it the flyover division, or the flyover states, some of them, but we'll they're see. Not really, actually. So I've
You're
got,
not calling it Quebec,
this,
LOL?
This division's a little creative. I got Vegas and Colorado, geographically works. Dallas, even that works. And then I'm throwing St. Louis in because they're in the next farthest west.
That's fine.
They are the gateway to the west, actually.
Yeah, call it the gateway division. Yeah.
And I have the Great Lakes division, Chicago, Detroit, Minnesota, and Winnipeg.
So this is all in the Western Conference?
That's your Western Conference right there. That's completed. And it works pretty well geographically.
So wait, before you get to the East, did you move anybody out of the West as it's currently set up? I moved Detroit
into the West.
Yeah, Detroit moved into the West.
So who did you move out? Minnesota?
Yes.
Okay.
Now for the Eastern Conference.
And no, because you had Minnesota in the...
So did you move Winnipeg?
No, I did have Minnesota.
No, she didn't. No, so it was the same... It was what?
Where we have, oh, four, it was all 14, of
them? And then Seattle.
Seattle
and Detroit
Seattle.
Were added.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That's right. Okay. Now the Eastern Conference. I'm calling this the Canadian Division.
That math doesn't work, but go ahead.
What doesn't work?
Just go ahead, because I'll figure it out when you keep
Nashville.
Reading the team.
Nashville.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
only Nashville, the best team in the league. Let's forget about that.
Yeah, wait till you hear their division.
Tennessee is no longer in the
wait
West.
Wait till you hear Nashville's
Weird.
Division.
It's just that.
Yeah, exactly, because they don't belong there in the first place.
Because it's in Tennessee.
It's just dumb. Eastern Conference, Canadian Division.
They were in the Western Conference when we were still founding this country, and Lewis and Clark were building the divisions.
That's right. There was a time when they were West. The Canadian division is Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, and Buffalo, because, you know, you're basically a Canadian city.
They're roving anyway, so
you're on the border.
Yeah, close enough.
Good enough. The Southeast division, Carolina, Florida, Tampa, and Nashville in the same division, which will be crazy for a couple seasons until, you know, things change, as they always do.
Carolina would never make the playoffs.
But that's a geographically concise division as well. The Mideast... Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Columbus, and Washington, and then the Northeast. New Jersey, the Islanders, the Rangers, and Boston.
Did you just put Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, columbus, and Washington in the Middle East?
Mid-East.
Oh, Mid-East, okay. And then what was the last division?
The Northeast.
No, but the teams. Boston,
New Jersey, New York Islanders, New York Rangers, and Boston.
I like this better than the way it's currently set up. If for no other reason, then we're not going to see the same two teams playing in the first round of the playoffs every year because the second-place team and the third-place team plays each other from the same division every year. Like I have said this before, and I'll say it again, I like the variety of if you are the number one seed, you're playing the worst team. If you're the number two seed, you're playing the seventh seed. Like you build playoff rivalries that way, not based on just making the same two teams play each other every year. Toronto and Boston, as great of a first-round series as that's going to be, they shouldn't be playing in the first round of the playoffs.
No, and you don't want to know that that's going to happen. Like we've known it since Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and they have too. And it seems to maybe have affected Toronto a little bit. It doesn't seem to have affected Boston. They're actually not that far from running down Tampa Bay for first place at this point. But
So what do you guys think of the eight-division format?
I like it. I think it's – I like the opportunity for still having the mix of you win your division but also being able to have a large number of teams that are wild card.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like – even though it hasn't really come back to bite them yet, I just don't like the potential for underwhelming teams to get in simply because they're in a bad division. It's one thing if the winner, okay, it's one team, worst case scenario, versus top three, where the third place team in one division could be 20 points below the third place team in another division. And again, it hasn't killed them yet, but that's an opportunity that can happen and probably will. Given enough seasons.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I'll go back to the example that we're using. At the moment, Tampa's going to win the Atlantic probably, and then Boston and Toronto are the two and the three in that division. But those are the teams with the three best records in the Eastern Conference. So you essentially have the two and the three in the East playing each other in the first round.
Yeah.
So it's getting to the point where it might come back to bite them. Now, I understand Washington's always good in the regular season, and Pittsburgh won the last two cups, so you can kind of cover it up right now. But if you just take all the teams out and you just go by points – you have the team with 96 points playing the team with 91 points in the first round, while a team with 87 points is playing a wild card. That's not right.
No, and when I look at postseason formatting, I want to see the best teams play in the biggest matchups. I want to see the best teams. I want to see, hypothetically, the two best teams in the West meeting in the Western Conference Final.
Yeah.
Whether they earned it because of their regular season record or they earned it because they went on some incredible four-week run in the postseason. I don't want to see two of the best teams in the league out in round one simply because they had to play the two best teams in round one.
And that's the argument against that as well. You're getting a great first round matchup. We get great first round matchups every year. Just because we can't predict it 2 months ahead of time doesn't mean it's not going to be good.
You're getting good first round matchups, but you run the risk of having poor second and third round
exactly.
matchups.
And we have seen that in the past. We've seen a conference final that you're just like, all right, well this is over.
I mean, how many times we talk 1 year about, we joke about the CNBC series, but where it was like Ottawa Islanders or something, we go, there's a clear path for this team to get to the Eastern Conference final because they're going to face two nobodies.
Yeah. It was last year. I mean, Ottawa did that last year. I don't want to – we talked about this ad nauseum last year. Like, I don't want to take away from what they did. But when the playoffs started, and it's almost unfair to a team like Washington, although they would have found a way to screw it up anyway probably, but you look at the path they have to go through and the path Ottawa had to go through, and Washington had a much better record. And I just – if Washington played Ottawa in a seven-game series in the first round last year – first round, emphasis on first round – are any of us really convinced Ottawa would have beat them?
No. Second round, maybe, but
I don't feel like you're sensitive enough to Washington fans.
I just picked them to win a hypothetical first round series. What more could I possibly do?
Against the fourth worst team in hockey this year.
So there's also the notion of maintaining division rivalries, which I get to an extent. There are a few of them that are – it is because they've killed many of them. They moved Detroit and Chicago out of the same division, and that was the best rivalry in the NHL.
Yeah, nobody cares about the division rivalries anymore.
Yeah, I don't think we should worry about it.
And you can create new rivalries. Why does it have to be division based?
It can be during the regular season too. Fine. Let's have Calgary and Edmonton in the same division. Yes. Let's, as I did, put the Blackhawks and Detroit in the same division and some of these other traditional rivals. But when it comes to the playoffs, stop worrying about that. Yeah. Worry about fair matchups.
Yeah, like why can't Pittsburgh-Tampa Bay be the big rivalry? What's wrong with that?
Just keep coming back to the example of Chicago and LA earlier this decade, how that became a great playoff rivalry, and you looked forward to watching that series every year, and they've never been in the same division. And now, since they've gone to this format, they've essentially killed any chance of that ever happening unless they meet in the Western Conference final.
Which, it's going to be a while for both those teams.
It would appear so, yes.
That's my contribution.
Let's see. What else does Craig have on this sheet?
Boy.
Okay. Update on the major NHL awards. Are we doing that? Is that a real thing?
Well, you know, maybe we don't have time for it. Maybe we should wait a week on that one. Sorry to tease
you all. We've got a little bit of time. Let's at least do the Hart and the Vezina.
I guess we've already touched on the Pacific race, which is insane, by the way. Spots 2 through 4 are separated by no points or like 0.5 points or something. I have no idea what's happening in the Pacific. I have no idea what's happening in the wild card race in the Western Conference right now, but it's fun to watch.
Yeah, I don't think the Pacific's just very good.
No,
quite frankly.
That's why Vegas could still make the conference final, and this season would be just the greatest success story in the history of expansion teams.
Yeah, because I mean, I look at this; they're going to have to go through one for Vegas. They go through one of Colorado, Dallas, Anaheim, Calgary, St. Louis, round one. I don't think I like really any of those teams to beat Vegas, and then San Jose, LA. I think they're on the other end of the curve now.
Anaheim's the wild card, if they can get a wild card.
Yeah. Anaheim would be the matchup I don't want if I'm Vegas.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because I think that Anaheim is a good team and if they can get healthy.
Yeah, that's the worst matchup for any. Yes. I mean, if they play Nashville, I still don't think they're winning. But
No, but they're not going to play Nashville until the conference final. But
Vegas, you mean?
Yeah. But
no,
Vegas.
I'm talking about Anaheim. If Anaheim and Nashville's still winning that series. But
yeah.
Anaheim's really the wild card you don't want to see.
Yeah.
Okay, awards. What do you want to start, Luke?
We've already talked about Calder. That's
done.
The result.
Calder,
we
don't
even
need
to. Let's go Vezina.
Okay, I'm curious what you guys, because we can talk about the Hart Trophy in a minute, but there are like 17 candidates.
Yeah. Everybody's good.
What an optimistic outlook on the NHL this season by Jamie Eisner.
He is Mr. Positive, Mr. Sunshine, as we call him around here.
Oh, all the time.
Is it?
All right, somebody give me some goalies.
Pecorine
and Andre Vezilevsky.
Pecorine has to be in it, doesn't
he?
He's jumped into it. I mean, for most of the season, I thought this was Vasilevsky's award, and he still may win it. But
who's your third candidate?
There's a bunch of them in the mix. Gibson has to be in there.
I think we have talked
Hellebuyck
about
Hellebuyck has to be in there.
Yeah.
But it is pretty clearly a two-candidate race to actually win it,
right? I think so at this point.
That clicking you hear is me still trying to sort the NHL stats so I can... And look, 19 clicks later, I've got it.
Sergei Bobrovsky's tailed off just a little bit recently, but still a guy to consider, but of the guys in the true mix right now, I would say those are the top two. It's got to come down to those two.
I'd go Rinne. I mean,
would you go Rinne?
Yeah,
I think I'm going Rinne right now. I think Vasilevskiy's really. I shouldn't say really fall off. Compared to how lights out he was for the first 60 games of the year.
Yeah, he slipped.
He is slipping a bit.
Yeah,
he's still extremely good, but he's slipping a bit.
I think I gave this award to Vasilevskiy 2 weeks ago. And
I gave him the MVP like a month ago when we did it.
Rinne started 52 games, and he still doesn't have double-digit regulation losses.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's another stat. That's part
of it. It's the team in front of him, too. So.
Well, but so is Vasilevskiy's team. Mm-hmm. I mean,
those are the two best teams in hockey. So how do you decide then, I guess? I don't know.
That just comes down to your personal preference of which stats mean the most to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know goalie stats in a lot of ways are antiquated, but having watched them both play, I feel like Vasilevskiy has that cushion where he knows even if he gives up three goals most nights, he's going to win. Rinne doesn't give up that many goals. He has a better defense in front of him, but it's not like Tampa Bay's defense is bad.
No, I mean, that might be the second best blue line in hockey now with the addition of Ryan McDonagh, so...
It's hard for me to look past the 2.25 goals against average in 52 starts.
Yes. I talked to him yesterday, and he talked about how much last year's playoff run helped him personally in terms of confidence to know that he can do that. And granted, Rinne had his ups and downs in last year's postseason, if you remember. But he said it just changed his mindset coming into this season. He's just sort of more positive and just brush things off if he hits a little patch. And he's been incredible. I thought he was really sharp last night. I thought, again, the Coyotes had more chances in that game than the Predators did, but he was terrific.
Just confidence-wise, if there's a shot that gets redirected on him, he still stops it. If the puck's loose, he's not scrambling for it. He just pins it. Like it's just – we saw it. We've seen it throughout his entire career. Like, he's been one of the best goalies for the last 10 years outside of playing in Pittsburgh in the Cup last year, or I guess in Pittsburgh at all last season. But – He seems to have hit even another level, and maybe it is that confidence Craig's talking about where we all saw what he could do last year with their season on the line a lot, and he obviously saw it too. You combine that with the defense in front of him, and I don't know how you give it to anybody other than him at this point.
Okay.
Is that the end of the show?
Well, no.
I agreed.
It felt like you've just decided that award.
Yeah.
So
we should move on.
We should be doing every topic like this.
We're not going to do the Selke, are we?
Usually you guys fight
Patrice Bergeron until further notice.
It's the Patrice Bergeron award.
All right, let's go comprehensively.
Are we all in agreement that Jack Adams goes to Gerard Gallant still?
Yes,
okay, so that one's done.
Has to be.
Who's the GM of the year? I still think Ray Shiro's in the mix on that one.
Yeah.
Shiro might be. I'm trying to think who else. I'm trying to think who fits the formula.
I don't want to see George McPhee win this.
No, he doesn't.
He deserves to.
It's got to be. I would take Shiro over him. I mean, it's got to be a playoff team.
Or you could just choose David Poile again because he got Kyle Turris to add to.
Won another trade.
He's so
just
good.
He keeps adding pieces every year.
Yzerman went and got Ryan McDonagh. And so those guys are in the mix, but I think I'd give it to Shiro.
Shiro continues to build that team that was literally nothing when he first got there. And whether they make the playoffs or not this year, that might determine whether or not he wins the award, but they are much better now than they were certainly 2 years ago, but even a year ago. And look, he had the guts to take Hischier instead of Nolan Patrick, which right now looks like the smarter move. And Patrick was pretty widely considered the number one pick.
Yeah.
I don't know if you count last year's draft as part of this year's GM of the Year
award. I have no idea what they count as part of GM of the Year award.
All right.
I think we can pretend all we want that's a one-year award. It never is.
Oh.
Lady Bing?
Seriously? Let's just do the Hart Trophy.
All right, clearly that's all Craig wants to talk about. So, Craig, who is your Hart Trophy winner?
Who is my winner
now? You guys aren't going to like my
because
answer.
Because they're in the playoffs, I'm taking Nate MacKinnon. He's my MVP. Colorado's in a playoffs. In fact, they're in the first wild card spot right now. I'm amazed that they are in that position after trading Matt Duchene. And Nate MacKinnon's been spectacular, averaging 1.37 points per game, which is the best in the NHL. He's the biggest reason for me. I don't know where this team is without him. They're god-awful without him. And you can say that about a bunch of teams. You can say it about Edmonton, but Edmonton's still god-awful. So without Connor McDavid, where would they be? Well, they'd still be near the bottom of the Western Conference standings. So.
Yeah, they'd be picking first and getting Connor McDavid.
I mean, there are a couple other players like that. Like, if you look at Kopitar's season, he's been spectacular. I think he belongs in there. And I mean, LA, especially when they didn't have Jeff Carter for much of the season, without Kopitar, they're right down there with Edmonton. So he's been incredible this season as well. But I'm still going with Nate McKinnon.
As am I.
If they drop out of the playoffs, are you guys not taking McKinnon?
I'm not. It is that important to me. I know some people don't think it should matter that much.
It's also super close this year, too.
It is.
These are razor-thin margins.
So show me. Elevate your team. Lift your team up. Be superhuman. Be the guy. And lift your team into the playoffs when they're a questionable team.
When we're looking at like him and Kucherov, who's leading in points, I'm willing to overlook this. And obviously there's a games played element to this, too. But I'm willing to overlook the 6, 7, or 8 point deficit. If you're able to take a team that nobody expected to as a center and play a key role leading them to the postseason. Like, I'm willing to overlook that point deficit.
This is funny. We're getting back to where we were last year. Apparently goals mean more to me in the Hart Trophy race than maybe they should, or certainly to a lot of people. But Kucherov wouldn't even be my second pick anymore. Malkin's right there. Yeah. And if Colorado misses the playoffs, Malkin quietly has 40 goals, which is number 3 in the league. And 89 points, which is number 2 in the league.
It is, yeah. He's on my list of 3, I think. But I really like center. The season that Kopitar's had. L.A., and when you look at – I just wrote this story on Kopitar. When you look at the disparity in points between him and the second player on the team, when I wrote the story, it was the second largest disparity in the NHL behind New Jersey, which is Taylor Hall to Nico Hischier. And a lot of people think Taylor Hall belongs in this mix, too. Where would New Jersey be without him? So
he's in
that's
the conversation.
Shirelli wouldn't vote for him.
There are just so many better candidates right now.
But if Kopitar finishes if Kopitar finishes 15 goals behind Malkin,
well, I mean, I
because that's possible.
I would say Kopitar. A couple things.
I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it. Kopitar is more valuable to his team than Malkin is to his team, and I love Evgeny Malkin.
I don't disagree with that logic, but then the only area where that becomes flawed is no team on a consistent winner could ever win the Hart Trophy.
Right, and it has to be just one of the factors that you use in measuring. It can't be the sole one. But I would also say this about Kopitar. He's a Selke Trophy candidate every year. He's a spectacular two-way player.
And he's never going to win it.
No, he's never going to win it. But he's 7th in points right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My top three right now is probably McKinnon, Malkin, Kopitar in that order.
I would go. I can hear the argument on McKinnon. I don't have a problem with that. I would say right now I have McKinnon and Malkin tied. It is weird to not even have Kucherov in the top three after the way he started this year, but he has sort of trailed off, as odd as that is to say, because he's still having a great year. But you factor that in with the notion.
I'm
that
always
going
to default to center.
It really would be weird to have a ballot without Kucherov on the top three. It does feel weird, but
he does lead the NHL in points, though, and he is on one of the two best teams. He probably would still be my third, but you're right. Kopitar's right there.
Yeah.
McDavid's third in the NHL in points, and he has more goals this year than he had last year.
Right. His team's trash.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Let's close this out by talking about Rick Tocchet.
Okay.
Tough moment, obviously. He lost his mom, Norma, on Wednesday after a battle with brain cancer. His quotes yesterday, I don't know if you saw these, what he said. Yeah, first of all, I was amazed that Rick Tocchet was back at work the day after his mom died. And as he said, look, I'm a routine guy, and she would have wanted it anyway. But to be able to gather yourself after you lose your mother, and he admitted, I'm a mama's boy, that was just astounding to me. He was behind the bench last night coaching the team, and that's a tough comeback. Your thoughts?
I love this quote that you tweeted out, and I don't have it in front of me, so I don't want to misrepresent it. But
I'll read it in a minute.
His quote on her view of his playing career was pretty amazing, honestly.
I never deserved a penalty. I never had a bad game. It was always the coach's fault. I could do no wrong. In her eyes, I was like Gretzky and Lemieux put together. That's an incredible quote.
It really is.
That might be the quote of the year.
It's one of the best I've seen.
It's funny the way you just said it, thinking of Rick Tocchet as a mama's boy. He's one of the toughest players from his era. And also, this is the thing about Tocchet. You know, you look at the Coyotes now, and you look at that line with Nick Cousins and Jordan Martinook and Brad Richardson, and everybody talks about how that's a Rick Tocchet line right there. Like, you can see how that line came together on a team he coached. But he scored a bunch of goals when he played, too. He wasn't just – like, Rick Tocchet wasn't some fourth-line grinder.
No.
Tocchet was a really good player.
Yeah.
He was the prototypical power forward.
He's done a remarkable job with this team this season, and you're right. It is in the second half of the season, certainly, and sticking with what he believed his system was capable of in the first half when this team wasn't winning any games. So to your point on him being back coaching so quickly, it doesn't shock me. Like, I hate when people criticize somebody for doing that, because that's, if that's the way he deals with stuff that's going on in his life, that's within him and his family. And he's been part of either playing or coaching hockey pretty much his entire life.
Yeah.
So let him do what he needs to do.
I'm a writer, so I love anecdotes. It's one of my favorite parts of writing. And the anecdote he gave about playing junior hockey with Sault Ste. Marie when Terry Crisp was the coach was amazing. What his mom used to do. He said she used to make the whole team veal sandwiches. She's Italian, of course, and Taka was raised in an Italian-eating family. He said, that used to get me on the power play, and that's what Terry Crisp always says. She'd be outside the bus with veal sandwiches and a bottle of wine to Terry Crisp. For some reason, I'd be on the power play the next day.
That's awesome. That's so good.
That's pretty fantastic.
That's so good.
So, heartfelt condolences to Rick Tocchet and the entire family. That's tough. But amazing to see him back, and amazing to see what the Coyotes are doing right now.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it really is his system, so credit to him. We're going to wrap it up. I will throw one. It's not a correction, but it's worth pointing out. Kopitar did win the Selke 2 years ago.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. That's right. They gave him the that was the year Patrice was hurt.
And remember, Kopitar didn't even show up.
Yeah,
because, probably because he just assumed Bergeron was going to win the Selke like everybody else did. But he did actually win it 2 years ago. But other than that, it's the Patrice Bergeron Award. All right, that's going to do it for us. We actually kept this podcast under an hour for the first time, possibly, in show history, except the two episodes Jamie deleted. Those were both perfect in every way. For Craig Morgan and Jamie Eisner, and you know what? Leftovers hasn't even been here, and I didn't realize it until right now.
He's very forgettable.
He's had a severe cough all day, so he didn't want to disrupt things, even though he does have a mic.
So are we even rolling?
I hope so.
Okay. For Craig Morgan, Jamie Eisner, and possibly Leftovers, I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.